Vlora, Albania. Two young women running. They look like girls, little slips of girls, as they fly down ancient cobbled streets, past the blind facades of stone houses, darkened by another of the frequent blackouts. Pale candlelight flickers against window panes, medieval and mean, a city within a city. The younger is a girl, barely 13, though taller and more filled out than her companion, yet far short of womanly. Cathedral spires, still silvered in moonlight, ignore the thin thread of red dawnlight tinging the eastern sky. Stars glimmer defiantly like blue-white diamonds. There is no wind at all. The stillness of the trees is absolute, the shadows they cast impenetrable. An old man, thin and brittle as the branches above his head, is roused from his drunken stupor by the anxious click-clack of shoes as the women cross his small square. He stirs, regarding them from the stone bench that serves as his home. His arms are crossed over his bony chest as if in reproof. Noticing him, one of the women stops abruptly, slips off her shoes. Now, both barefoot, they silently flee the square like shadows before the rising of the sun. They enter an evil-smelling alley. Garbage overspills dented cans. A creature lifts its head, growls, baring its yellow teeth. Its ears are triangular and very large, making it look more like a jackal than a dog. The women swerve out of its way, race to the far end of the alley. The street beyond is nearly as dark. It's littered with ripped signs, shoes, and caps rioters left in their haste to retreat from the truncheons and guns of the advancing militia. They turn a corner, the taller woman now in the lead. The smell of roasted corn and the sharp odor of urine assail them. Halfway along the street, the taller woman stops in front of a door. About to knock, she hesitates, turning to look into her companion's eyes. Emboldened by the nod of encouragement she receives, she raps sharply on the door with her scabbed knuckles. No sound, and reaching past her, her companion slaps the flat of her hand insistently against the wood. At last, there comes a stirring from inside the house, a scraping followed by a hacking cough. The door opens a crack, and a woman with gray-streaked hair and sunken cheeks opens her ashen eyes wide. She's gripped by the look of a hare who sees in the fox's presence its imminent death.
Liridona!
Hello, mother,
the taller woman says. Her mother gasps.
What have you done? Are you insane? How?
I escaped,
Liridona gestures,
with the help of my friend, Ali.
For just an instant, the expression on Liridona's mother's face softens. Then the abject terror returns, and she says to Ali,
You stupid, stupid girl. Listen, your daughter was a prisoner,
Ali says. Liridona's mother says nothing.
Did you hear me? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Her eyes are fixed on a spot above her daughter's head as if she's willing herself to be far away. Ali turns Liridona around and pushes up her shirt to reveal a constellation of wheels made by cigarette burns.
What's the matter with you? She says. We need your help. We're both in terrible danger.
The older woman has averted her gaze.
I know that better than you.
Ali can tell that beneath the mother's mechanical tones lie glimmers of pain, fury, and, worst of all, resignation.
Will you help us get to the ferry for Brindisi? In Italy, we'll be safe.
You'll never be safe.
Ali is undeterred.
Please, we have nowhere else to turn.
Another cough explodes from behind Liridona's mother. All at once, the door is almost wrenched off its hinges and Liridona's mother is shoved out of the way to make room for a huge hulking man dressed in a sleeveless undershirt and pajama pants. His darkly bristled cheeks and close-set eyes give him the appearance of a wild boar. He spits heavily, then, stepping out into the street, he peers beyond them, looking both ways.
Foolish girl!
His hand lashes out, striking Liridona across the face.
Go back to where you belong! You'll get us all killed!
As Liridona cowers, Ali shoulders past her.
This is your daughter.
The boar man glares at her. Liridona flinches, then bursts into tears.
I tried to tell you,
she sobs. Allie says,
she's your child, your flesh and blood.
He takes one more look around.
Christ!
He hurriedly steps back into the shadows of the doorway and slams the door in their faces. Allie pounds on the door with her fist, but to no avail. She's about to try to find another way in when her gaze is drawn to the eastern end of the filthy street. The sun, rising, spills its light along the cobbles like liquid fire. Out of that dazzle emerge two men armed with handguns. The instant they realize they've been seen, they sprint toward the two women. Allie grabs Liridona by the back of her shirt, wheels her around, and pulls her along. Liridona stumbles after her as they run in the opposite direction. But they are already winded from their long run, and the two men gain on them at an alarmingly rapid clip. Up ahead, Allie hears the chiming shouts of sounds like a demonstration. Changing direction, Allie heads them toward the boiling knot of students occupying a nearby plaza ringed with rugged hawthorn and lindens. Like the trees, banners rise ahead of them, calling for bread and clean water, decent sanitation, heat and light, power. Power now! Young people are everywhere, piling into the plaza, fiercely determined expressions on their faces as they begin to chant in unison. The raw, seething power of youth shakes the lindens like a sudden storm, and it seems as if hope is rising as inexorably as the flowers of spring. Grabbing Liridona by the hand, Allie plunges into the maelstrom of bodies. All around them, the air shudders with the angry shouts of the demonstrators. Fires are being lit, fueled by the garbage piled in the gutters. Acrid smoke swirls, mingling with a fog that seems to have risen from the sewer grates, overrunning the streets and the plaza like an army of vermin. A great shout erupts as a group of about 10 young men rock a car back and forth, harder and harder, until, with their combined strength, they upend it. The massed shout gains a hurricane force. There the car sits like a turtle on its back. Someone opens the gas tank. At almost the same moment, the morning trembles to the high-low wail of police sirens. Everything starts to happen in double time. A length of rag is inserted in the car's gas tank, its visible end lit. The mass of humanity seems to hold its breath. The car explodes just as the militia appears, pouring out of fog-bound streets into the plaza. Harsh orders, magnified through a portable amplifier, are fired like flares over the heads of the protesters. Then guns are fired and the melee commences. Among it all, Allie and Liridona dodge and sidestep their antagonists, sweeping aside fluttering banners, leaping over the fallen, trying to keep themselves from being trampled by the mob, which flows first one way, then another. A clear line of sight is all but impossible. Eyes tear from the smoke and debris. It's then that the two men appear out of the blur of bodies and faces. They grab Liridona, and as Allie tries to attack them, one of them slams the side of her head. She staggers, loses her grip on her companion, and, slammed by rushing bodies, goes down face first. Sprawled on the ground, she's kicked and struck by fleeing feet and tramping boots. She almost loses consciousness, but, gathering herself, manages to regain her feet just in time to see the two men dragging Liridona away.